Hello, I'm Laurie Demori.
And I'm Laura Jackson, and together we run Towpath, four little kiosks, a kitchen, a bar, a seated area, and our larder, which together make up our restaurant, alongside Regent's Canal, deep in East London. This is our 11th year running Towpath. Obviously, this year has been quite different to the previous 10, but it's been an amazing time because we wrote a cookbook which was released in October, and it's filled with lots of beautiful recipes and has given us a chance for people to recreate Towpath when they're not able to be here.
We've had a lot more time to talk to each other than we usually do, Laura and I. Look at where we've been and where we've gone and reminisce about stories and all the really incredible people that we've gotten to meet because of Towpath. And so welcome to our Towpath world in audio form. In this series, you're going to hear an ongoing conversation between Laura and I. And in each episode, one of us will speak to someone very special who is somehow connected to our Towpath world. Laura and I have recorded these conversations in the third kiosk where we rarely get to sit with each other. And you might hear right now, in fact, some pounding of footsteps as joggers come by and the coots squawk and cyclists go by. There's no really stopping Towpath traffic, and we are doing our thing in the middle of it all. This is part two of Laura and my continuing conversation. I mean, I've stared for so long at that rusty corrugated iron and cement and the painted heron that the real heron sometimes goes and stands by, and bless the very lovely volunteers who have planted floating reed beds that have become habitats for birds and things. There's been just an incredible transformation in the last 10 years, but when we got here, it was the Wild West. Jason Lowe, who I was married to, who's a food photographer, very wonderful, talented food photographer, his studio where he had lived and worked for a long time before I even met him is basically right across from the canal. He called it the ass end of London. Outside of his flat, somebody had graffitied East fucking London, which the first time I brought my kids to London, they thought that was hilarious. It was a bit of a no-fly zone, and when the area started to get some attention, mostly what would happen with the old buildings is that they were just knocked down and really mostly hideous, cheap new builds were going up. The Bangstock building, which the Towpath is in, instead of being knocked down, it was sort of reimagined by a Spanish company. And we sort of think that that is the reason these little kiosks were carved out on the canal side, because in Spain, that sort of thing exists, like tiny little places, which at the time that we opened, there was really nothing for miles on this stretch of canal. It's to Jason's credit that he noticed that something was going on with this building, and there were these four kiosks, but at that point there were three that were available with the for sale sign, and the metal shutters just pulled down. There was no way to know what was behind. And he said to me, call up the estate agent and ask to see what they are. He was traveling or busy. So I made a little appointment with Beverly, and she came and she wanged up the shutters to show, ta-da, three little things that were basically the size of bus shelters that were breeze block and cement floors and about as uninspiring as you could imagine. But somehow they seem to have possibility. So he put in an offer, and then someone else, we didn't get it. And then I remember that I was driving from London to the house in Italy, and I got a phone call from Beverly saying, those guys have pulled out. If you want these kiosks, you can have them. And I basically drove by myself from Switzerland to Florence, kind of dreaming up the possibility. I was at that point in London, had been in London for a year. I wasn't interested in writing from London because I didn't feel like I had anything to say. I had just done a book In Italy, that was my sort of farewell book, which was the Bean Eaters and Bread Soup, which was a real homage to people and place. It was sort of like put down my pen and had no idea what I was going to do with my life. And I was in London, 50 years old, and I thought, I'll do it. I'll do whatever it is we do that should be around food and simplicity.
As I said before, I was at Rochelle Canteen. I was at Rochelle for just over 2 years. And I think in the summer before I left, I went on holiday to this place in France called the Auberge de Chassignol that was run by an English couple. Harry Lester opened the Anchor and Hope, the amazing gastropub on the Cut. And him and his wife had moved to the middle of nowhere in France and opened this little auberge that has 8 bedrooms and a bar and a restaurant. Alex, my husband, and I went on holiday there. I fell in love with the place. And so I was a bit nervous. I kind of, when I was there, I was like, so it's a seasonal, like Towpath was open for 8 months. And, you know, generally you would do a season and then the next year would be someone else. I was quite petrified of Harry, so I didn't ask him at the time if he was looking for someone for the next year. But when I got back to London, I emailed him. You get to know everyone who's staying there, so we'd obviously chatted to him. So I emailed and said, are you looking for a cook for next year? And then, you know, I told him where I'd worked, and he obviously knew everyone who I'd worked with and kind of said yes. So that's what I did. That's where I met Laurie. So Laurie and Jason came maybe 3 times, I think, during the season. Harry was in the kitchen with me, but was doing other stuff and would leave me to my own devices. It was very much his menus. And so it was a really amazing experience because I very much had him there holding my hand and teaching me, but then also very much left on my own, which I think was a really good learning experience, not to just be like every 2 seconds. How do I do this? How do, you know, can you help me? Da, 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 da. Really kind of a pivotal moment for me in my cooking. And I had no idea what I was going to do when I came back. I'd only really worked in 2 kitchens before going there. So, I mean, I still had a lot to learn.
The lentils on, the sausages will be fine.
It is funny, like, trying to remember when you first thought of something or who thought of what first. I absolutely remember that it was Jason saying about you and Amanda, because Amanda Thompson was front of house.
Yes.
And I think that when I was thinking about doing Towpath, I was so excited about a certain aspect that had a lot to do with the Camino and simplicity and this quiet canal where there would hardly be anyone, that it, I wasn't really thinking that we needed help, you know. And he was like, you are not going to be able to like stand out there by yourself doing it, you need help. And so he was really the one who said, you guys. And then I was like, oh yeah, we probably will need help, I don't know. But of course, as soon as he said it, it seemed like the most obvious thing, because your food was absolutely delicious. And then Chassignol was closing, and you were going to come back to London. What a perfect... Sometimes when things really just, like, come together just right at the right moment. Laura must have thought, like, oh, my God, who are these people? Like, hi, we've got this venture that we're dreaming up. It's going to be amazing. What are you doing when you come back to London? Do you want to be, like, part of it? Do you want to... I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. There would be no Towpath if this place hadn't existed that sort of called to us and to our imaginations. It all sounds so, like, business planless. You know, Laura, come back to London and do you want to invest in this? Like, hello, how do you do? Do you want to invest in this thing? We don't really know what it is. Oh, and there's no kitchen. We'll be cooking from home. You, like, of course. No, thank you. But yes, I'm curious.
This sounds fun and exciting, and to be involved with something from the beginning. I'd always been working for people, and I still, you know, think it's really important to work under people. But this was like, okay, I'm going to finally be doing my own thing. For me, from the moment that you guys asked me to do this with, it wasn't yours versus mine. I was included from day one in what we should have and the color of the tiles and this layout and the aesthetic and all of that stuff, which was pretty amazing because you guys, you didn't have to do that because essentially I was an employee of yours. I think all of that really made me feel like this feels like a really good thing to be doing because it's very much, we're all the same, and that was like a really good sign for me to be that involved. So then the first year we didn't have a kitchen on site. Now Towpath comprises of four kiosks. You walk down the ramp onto the canal and there's a kitchen, is one kiosk, there's the bar, and then there's a seated area is the third kiosk, and then the fourth kiosk is mostly where we store things, but also we can put a table in there that people can sit in, but it's like our little larder, which in the first year the kitchen didn't exist at all. And then what we now call the fourth kiosk, our larder, was a bike repair shop.
I mean, I absolutely remember the first day because we were out here and it was me and Amanda and it was freezing. It was mid-February, which is quite a grim time, and really kind of misty. And behind the bar, we had like a dual-lit urn that we would put porridge in. And then we had a little reconditioned panino maker that we were going to do the cheese sandwiches from. But I actually realized so much at the time that I felt like I was playing house. Like, I really didn't feel like I was me. And so when the first person showed up, who I remember was this guy from New York, and he ordered the porridge and I took his order, I was just laughing hysterically because I felt like, oh my God, what are you doing? This is like, I felt like I was acting or something. And playing house and then bringing him his porridge, and he's sitting out in the freezing cold on the kind of dusty, scruffy dirt. I really was thinking, what are we doing? But it looked beautiful even then. I remember, like, the aesthetic was always so homey and inviting. For me, the part that was really interestingly challenging and inviting that I loved was to see how simple and how small and how much can we offer you out of nothing and make you just stop. And you know, when you saw people walk by and go like, oh my gosh, what is this? Like, it's like some sort of mirage in the desert. That part was so gratifying. And that was part of the experiment. So I was never wishing like, oh God, I wish we had a much bigger place. It's always like, now let's see how the experiment's gonna work.
Obviously, the setup was not your most usual setup. So just to kind of set the scene, I was cooking across the road. I was cooking in Laurie and Jason's flat. Exactly. Often there were other things, other shoots going on in the flat, which would have been for books. It'd be quite possible that I would turn up for work and there's another chef in there cooking. And so I'm sort of trying to lightly tread around them and cook. Fridges in their living room. Things being stored everywhere, basically your apartment being turned into a kind of walk-in fridge, larder, storeroom. So, you know, I would say it wasn't your typical setup. Obviously, I know there are lots of kitchens where the chefs are not cooking on site, but I'm not sure if generally they're in someone's home where they're carrying on with their normal life.
And then don't you think, I mean, the way I remember it, in a way, it was like such an experiment. And because we weren't working next to each other, it was like the end of the workday, then we'd want to come together and talk about, like, how is it for you and how is it for us? And, oh my God, that person came back and that person came back again and someone's bringing all their friends, and what was Laura going to be able to make for them?
And I always wanted an excuse to come over the canal just so I'd be like, how many people have come today? And look, there's four people here. And I mean, I know you definitely went across a lot, but I think I probably came across over 100+ times a day, bringing things over, collecting things,
you know, even that first year, it was like teapots with loose tea. Like, yeah, are you kidding? We're in a space that is 5 meters by 2 meters. And we're
saucers.
Just...
I mean, yeah, because they look beautiful.
Yeah, and then people were like bringing us their old teapots, but we had no space whatsoever. But also there was always from the very beginning, maybe because the kind of experimental nature and the surprise that we even existed in this space where nothing had been happening, that our customers from the very beginning were like so game to kind of go along with this, that they put up with things that you just normally wouldn't. So the wind would come up and it just deposited like a layer of dust on everything, and everyone would just politely like wipe their plate and pretend it wasn't happening. And then
yeah, the towpath wasn't paved at that point, so it was kind of dust.
Oh, and sometimes, and you just look at
and
people
it was at
like,
an
oh
angle
my God, I'm
as
so
well.
Sorry, and they would just smile and go like, it's fine, and then they'd come back.
And I think the enthusiasm that you gave just was infectious. So even if people were eating their porridge with pieces of dust in it, it didn't feel like anywhere else in London.
My first ever day, I had porridge because I just thought that would be the most simple and like not get in the way thing because I was shy. And then I tried the Mirinda tomatoes for my breakfast, and that was every day I always had that. But recently I discovered the fried eggs. And obviously the fried eggs are absolutely amazing and I'm like fully addicted now, which is not good because you really have to like sit down and take a moment for your breakfast when you get fried eggs out. So it's probably not the most productive of breakfasts, but that's my number one. I'm Bill and I've been working at Towpath for 2 years doing all sorts.
What do you do outside of the towpath?
I'm an actor.
Are you?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Sometimes I can find talking to customers all day quite overwhelming, so it's nice that you can then go into the kitchen and maybe do a bit of prep work or help clean pots and pans. And then when you're kind of feeling up for it again, you embrace the human interaction. That's a good story. My first ever day of working here, someone fell into the canal. And most people were quite shocked and sad to see that, but I thought it was just very exciting. So I'm sure a big smile spread across my face. And then I didn't see another person fall into the canal for like a good 6 months. What are the chances on your first day?
We are still in East London at the home of my very, very dear friend, Sophie Darlington. Sophie and I have had many, many, many conversations over the years, and I chose Sophie because, for one thing, she's one of my favorite people on earth to be in conversation with, and because she has what many, many people would call one of the best jobs on the entire planet, but which I am also convinced not everyone could do, despite the thought that they would so love to be a wildlife cinematographer out in the deep, deep wilds of places that many of us will never get to see in our lives. Very, very patiently and incredibly skillfully capturing animals in the natural world and not chasing after them, but actually, usually, really watching the natural world. And so one of the things that I thought would make her a particularly interesting person to talk to is because we have a funny parallel, because I would say that in what I do out in the towpath is very much being in one place and watching the world unfold. And there's an incredible amount of natural world even in our very tiny ecosystem.
The towpath came about whilst I was watching, because you were married to my stepbrother. And I saw the two of you conjure it up. And out of this tiny little hole on the side of the canal, I saw this thing grow, and I've been watching it for 10 years, just grow and grow and turn into this exactly what you wanted it to be. What I love was that you knew from the off what you wanted it to be. You put your footprint, you were very, very clear. It seemed to me you always knew. Did you always know exactly who you wanted to come? Because every time I go there, I sit and I watch and I go, this is like the perfect crowd. It's such a brilliant mix of people. So is that what you imagined you were going to get?
I think that I was starved for conversation outside of my conversation just with Jason and all of his friends and the kind of inherited community that I walked into that was beautiful but not of my own making. And I mean, I'd never opened a place before, but if anything that you do that you're going to be spending all of your time doing, you want to be there yourself. So I think that I tried to make a place that would be a place that I would want to spend time in, yeah, and that I imagine that other people would want to spend time in. And by asking them to do a few simple things and by denying them, I think, sometimes what they thought they needed, which was the decaf soy latte to go, yeah, or the place to set up their laptop, mm-hmm, for hours. And by saying, now we'd love you to stay and just, even if it's only for a minute. Once you do that, you're sort of setting in motion something that invites conversations to happen and invites people to also just settle, even for the shortest time, and look around or speak to their neighbor or just exhale.
But it's uncanny because that's what you do. I cannot count the amount of times that I've gone for breakfast and I'm still there at 5 p.m. in the afternoon. It's one of those places that you go and you don't plan on staying the whole day. You just, conversations evolve. You flip from table to table. You end up, made some of the most amazing friends through the towpath. We have this proper community and I go away, but it's always there. I come back and the first thing I do, I come home, I chuck my bags in, I wash because I'm obviously incredibly civil, and then I boot it on my bike down to the towpath, and then I know I'm home. You said earlier there's a parallel. There's absolutely a parallel because I've seen you in my space when I've been filming, and obviously I've seen you in your space, and there's a parallel about the watching. There's a meditative aspect to the towpath, which I completely get. It's a letting go. You know that you just give control over. And when you're filming wildlife, it's exactly the same. You can't sit there and go, oi, mate, do that again to the cheetah or the lion. You came out to, well, I was filming lions. And I remember you loved the lions, but the thing that you loved more than anything was...
the elephants.
Mm. And there was a reason for that, I think. It's because elephants would fit in the towpath. I mean, not great. They wouldn't be perfect. But they would, you know, they're just like, they would all sit there and make their decisions.
Another thing when I think about similarities, in the way that sometimes people come to towpath and say to me like, oh my God, you're living the life. I just want to do what you're doing. And you think, you so don't. You would last like 2 minutes. Can we talk for a minute about what you do and
yeah, sure,
what delights you about it and what would be possibly difficult for other people? Because, I mean, the idea of what we think we would like and what we actually would like, that's a really interesting notion to me.
Well, Laurie introduces me at the towpath, and I always feel really proud when she goes, this is Sophie, and she's my friend, and she's a wildlife cinematographer, natural history filmmaker. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. She's taught me to own it, actually. Before, I'd be like, photographer. I go away for months at a time to sit and observe and capture, if I can, behaviour for the BBC, for Netflix, whatever. I'm not patient. I'm really optimistic. I think that something's going to happen. Every morning I wake up and I get up and I'm driven by the fact that I'm going to get that shot that day and I'm going to get out there. What they do is absolutely up to them and you can't in any time influence it. I think that's the hardest thing. And I kind of love that because I'm a control freak. So it's deeply strange that I go out and do something where I'm not allowed to control anything.
So one of the things I think is interesting also about you is that you've been a vegetarian for longer, much longer than I've known you.
30 years, yeah.
And you're the sort of vegetarian that I love to eat with. You know, whenever you come to towpath, you never look like, what's on the menu for me? And so I'm just curious.
I love it.
Your short list of favorite things.
Oh, God, no problem. Well, obviously, toasted cheese sandwich with quince is number one stop. You know you're home when you've had that in your face. The nudie, that is just the lightest, most beautiful there is something about what Laura does to that.
Can
oh
you
my
describe God. What they are for someone who's
Nudie is like a fluffy, lightweight gnocchi. It's pasta, but not pasta.
Because do you know what it means, though, nudie?
It doesn't mean naked?
It does.
Does it?
So it's like a naked ravioli. It's like the inside of ravioli that is formed into a little ball shape.
It's like...
And almost floats off the plate.
It's like an angel sort of is on your tongue. It's the most ridiculously delicious. And sage butter, so that. The beetroot biryani is, again, just one of those things that I just home to when I see it on the menu. But it's really hard because I come in and I do that typical thing, which is most probably why I'm there from breakfast through to dinner, because I order about 18 plates and I'm just, nothing's going to stop me because I've usually been eating, you know, baked beans and biscuits. And I come home and this is my treat.
Because you really epitomize this kind of thing that happens a lot at Towpath, which is you'll just show up and you will show up like the kid at the playground, just looking around, wondering who else is at the playground. So many people kind of show up on their own because they're just not worried. First of all, they're certainly not worried about just spending time in their own company, and all the better if look who happens to show up. And
it's the most delightful thing because you will always meet someone and have a conversation you never expected to have. And that's the enabling of the no laptops, and people don't sit there on their phones. You know, you see people sitting there with sketchbooks or reading a lot.
I think there's just people who are temperamentally different, but you and I are the same in this. Like, I quite love to be forced to my edge and to be like, get home. I mean, there are so many times I've gotten in the bath and I'm just like, I'm so exhausted. Like, there's nothing I can do that can rest me. I am overexhausted. But there's something about, like, you know, in the summer days when everybody's out and it's just like, and the light and the people.
It's about the light. It's the light refracting off that canal, because you go there and every day it's different. There is never consistency. You go into any other restaurant and they've got their lights and they know how their lights are set. Your lights are set by the water and the way it reflects off the canal.
But then even in the, you know, at night, in the evenings, when the light goes and suddenly you have this like inky black canal. We could be on a bayou. We could be anywhere. The city has just disappeared.
It does.
And
that's right.
You know, the swans go by and the coots, and somebody cycles by and some little boat putters by, and it's, that feels magical. And then every time we turn the lights off, there's this, the back wall of the middle kiosk is tiled, white tiles, and it, you turn the light off and then it just reflects the water in this sort of psychedelic wavy thing. And I don't know. I will just never tire of the surprise of seeing that every time I turn the lights off.
If I was going to film the towpath, it would be about the light reflecting on them. It would have to be about the way light bounces off. You go down and there's so many things that are visual cues to the towpath. And it's, first of all, you walk past the kitchen and I'm tall enough that I can see in. So I can see Laura and I can see the whole crew in there. And the family, they're called the towpath family for a reason. You know, they really are. And there's bits of light that refract into that kitchen. Then you come past and is she here? Is she not here? Is Laurie here? If it's Alex, is it, you know, is it Mike? Who's it going to be on today? And if it's Laurie, you just get a smile. You come around the corner, you just get a smile that would break your heart. It's the best. And everybody I have ever met goes, Laurie's smile is just one of the most exceptional things. And there's a strength and a warmth and I was thinking of three words that summed you up. Warm, open and present. That's what you are. You're always in the moment. And that's wildlife too. Wildlife, you have to be in the moment. There's no point. You have to think ahead, but as you do when you're running the towpath, but you have to be in the moment. And I think that's what we share. We both love being in the moment. And I see you down there in your element. You're in the moment. I love the cleanup day. That was one of my favourite moments, where you're all sitting there in the kayaks going up and down the canal. And you feel like you're a part of something proper and good. It's like being in the Girl Guides, but with better food.
Well, I mean, there's nothing so amazing as putting a bunch of high-vis vests on children and giving them picker-uppers and having them pick up rubbish for a couple of hours and then have them like beg you to know when they can do it again. And that just makes me so happy. So I'm the first of four children, and my mom tells the story of, and my parents have now been very happily married for over 60 years, but she tells the story of something when I was a little baby that my father just wasn't enthusiastic enough about something. And she said she just picked me up and held me up to the sky and looked at me and said, "You will be enthusiastic." She's like, "Oh my God, if I knew that's all you had to do, I would have done it to everyone I could lift."
If I ever want to sort of like, if I want words of wisdom, I head to Laurie. That's where I get my words of wisdom. There's also that, because it's not that it's not been easy for anybody at the towpath. What's interesting is we've seen everybody go through ups and downs.
Well, because if you're anywhere for 10 years, yeah, and people are actually living, they've all been through stuff.
Yeah.
So we figured, like, bring your whole self, because that will certainly make it more interesting. And we'll certainly support each other. Mm. And it makes for a much more authentic way of being together, so that actually when nobody calls in sick. People call in sick because they're sick, but everyone is thinking, "Oh my God, who am I leaving in the shit? How can I help make this better?" Everyone will go like, "Huh, I was supposed to be doing this, but God, I don't want to leave them." And all of that is because we are bringing our whole selves, and therefore we care about each other. And we really support each other, which means that sometimes you are being supported and sometimes you are doing the supporting. And we all get to play all the parts over time. Yeah. And there's no escape from that. So
there isn't any. And that's, I guess, what makes it real.
If all of you didn't come with all your willingness to go along with our shenanigans and sit outside in the wind and the rain and whatever and say, "We'll do it." You know, it's really all of us making it.
Could I have a number one fan badge? I feel like I deserve it. But
You got it, girl.
Thank you. That, or just some new.
But I would actually require one myself.
You can have a number one fan of your own restaurant, whatever. You're really demanding.
No, of you, dear Sophie, is what I was trying to say.
I deliberately misunderstand you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Towpath Recipes and Stories.
This series was made possible by Chelsea Green Publishing, with a special thanks to Rosie Baldwin.
All the recipes talked about in this episode come straight from our cookbook, Towpath Recipes and Stories, which is out everywhere. Our producer is the lovely Hester Kant. Additional sound recording by Alex Katz. And our music is from Sam Amidon's latest album. The track is called Sundown.